I don't think I'm breaking news by saying that the cost of health care is high. This high cost forces people to make decisions which strongly impact their lives. One of the main catalysts for this high cost is the price of prescription, even over-the-counter medicines. Promise of affordability that generic drugs once presented has fallen prey to limits, even outright shortages. How has this happened? Are there solutions to correct the problem? How much cooperation by various parties is needed for those corrections to happen? All this is the focus of a report just released by the Coalition for Prosperous America that's titled The Hollowing Out of America's Medicine Cabinet. Joining us to share the findings of this report is senior economist with the Coalition for Prosperous America, Andrew Rushenberg. How are you today, Andrew?
Hey, how are you?
Good to have you here with us today. ProsperousAmerica.org is where you can learn more about the work of the organization, as well as, of course, read the report, the Hollowing Out of America's Medicine Cabinet. Just for a baseline, Andrew, for the listener, define how the report classifies generic drugs.
Yeah, so generic drugs are the chemically identical copies of a lot of the brand name drugs that you could find. And so all these drugs, and they start when they're developed as the brand name drugs, but once they get off patent, really anyone can manufacture these drugs and using the same active ingredients, the same doses, the same effect for a fraction of the price now that that patent has worn off. And so that's what we're looking at here. And today, these generics fill about 9 out of every 10 U.S. prescriptions because they are becoming the by far the cheapest form of drugs you can get here in the U.S.
Which is certainly great to know they're there, but the challenge is to get to them. Now, we're based in New Jersey. That's at one point. I mean, it's changed a bit over the last few years, but we were a pharma-producing juggernaut in New Jersey. What had the U.S. market share been with generic drugs? And as your report displays, talk about how much it's declined over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is a great story that's really underappreciated. And exactly, in New Jersey, a lot of the counties outside of Philadelphia, these used to be some of the richest counties in the U.S., richer than Northern Virginia was at the time. And back in 2002, for example, the U.S. produced 72% of the drugs that we consumed. And back in 2002. And so this was the majority of the drugs that we consumed here in the U.S. They were made here in the U.S. But today that's down to 27%, the lowest on record. And this is just a huge collapse that we've had in just a generation, 45% less than it was back in 2002. And this is because of a few different things. U.S. drug consumption has, of course, grown in that time, but 99% of that growth has been captured by imports. And our drug imports right now are at a record nearly $300 billion worth in 2025, 7 times what was that in 2002. So really what we're seeing here is imports filling this new share of U.S. production, and it's driving prices so low that a lot of these counties, a lot of these manufacturers that manufactured here in the U.S. and New Jersey and across the country have been forced out of business because of it.
So in order to try, if they wanted to compete with the importing companies, it basically becomes a financially losing possibility for these companies.
Exactly. And it's also good to note that this was not a fair fight. This is U.S. companies having to compete with state subsidies from countries like China and India, and then also manufacturers in China and India and a lot of these countries not really being held to the same safety standards that we have here in the U.S. And this has been really documented in a number of FDA cases where there's been fraud overseas, there's been really poor standards, and the FDA finds these once they go check, but they just don't have the opportunity to check a lot of these foreign facilities as often as they check the ones here in the U.S. And so it's not been a fair fight. It's been state subsidies, it's been these lower standards, and that's what U.S. companies have had to compete with. And the prices have been really being forced too low to be manageable to make things in the U.S. for a lot of these products. But we still have some companies in the space trying to hold on.
Is the product that's being imported strictly the finished product, or do these imports also include the elements that could be, if accessible, wind up being completed pharmaceutical products made here in the U.S.?
Yeah, so and this is a really good distinction because it's a little bit of both. And so one big thing that we look at is these finished products coming in, and this is primarily coming in from India. But increasingly what we're also seeing is that for some of the products that we do still make here in the U.S., they are becoming reliant on the base active pharmaceutical ingredients, the APIs, from countries like China. And India itself is also very reliant on China for these APIs. And for a number of products, for example, for antibiotics, you can have up to 90% of the global supply of these base pharmaceutical ingredients, these base chemical ingredients you need to make these medicines. They all are reliant on China. And so this is becoming a really big choke point in the system. And so it's really a little bit of both. We're importing more and more of these finished products, but even when we do make the finished product here in the U.S., they're reliant on these active pharmaceutical ingredients from countries like China as well.
Talking with Andrew Reichenberg, senior economist with the Coalition for Prosperous America. Prosperousamerica.org is their website. You can also read their report, The Hollowing Out of America's Medicine Cabinet, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. It's important to note, too, Andrew, what we are talking about as far as being imported and even being limited or shortages being created, these aren't fringe drugs for rare diseases. A lot of these are very commonly used elements, are they not?
Exactly. These are everyday medicines, and especially ones that we've been particularly looking into is ones needed in pediatric hospitals for especially liquid dose or a lot of times solid dose drugs. These are medicines you're taking every day. So it could be liquid form ibuprofen, very common things that are becoming more and more reliant on overseas. And it comes from a point where they originally want this to be cheaper. And so that's why they end up switching to a country like India and China in the first place. But what we're seeing is that when we have our domestic supply cut out, we're getting these shortages that happen because we're reliant on this overseas supply. We can't make it here in the U.S. And we particularly saw this with COVID. And that's when we see these 300 to 500% price hikes in these products when we can no longer source them domestically.
I guess that's the part people can't understand. If it's so profitable for these companies in China and India and a few elsewhere, why are there shortages? Are they not capable of meeting demand in their production?
So a lot of times that they are, but what really is the issue is that whenever there is a crisis in the supply chain, and so we really saw this with COVID, where countries like India were actually restricting their exports of certain medicines to serve their own markets first. And we didn't make a lot of these products or enough of these products in the U.S. anymore to supply everything. And then that's when we get these shortages. And then it also comes back to the quality issues. We've had one of the big cases that we've looked into is an explosion at a Chinese plant that made half of U.S. cisplatin supply, which is a necessary drug for chemotherapy. And once this happened, once they had this accident due to quality control failures, we had a shortage because there's just these crisis events that happen. And when there's no backup supply, when it's concentrated overseas, that's when we see these shortages. And that leads to price hikes, that leads to patients not getting their treatment. And it's really becomes, that's when the real crisis starts in the healthcare system.
Speaking of crisis, where does the FDA come in on all this? Because these are products being imported. Do they go directly to the company? Does FDA have supervision? Is there inspection either domestically or overseas? What's the oversight on these products?
So that's one thing that the FDA is improving on, but historically there's been a lot of gaps in overseas FDA inspections, and a lot of these companies have gone 5 years or more without any FDA inspection at all, especially with COVID when a lot of those inspections weren't as easy to do given all the closures and restrictions there. And when the FDA does go, they do find a lot of these problems, but the foreign facilities just aren't inspected as often and aren't able to be inspected as frequently as a lot of the U.S. plants are. And then FDA also gives advance notice for a lot of these foreign facilities. And then when this happens, what the FDA has actually found is that certain companies like Intas Pharmaceuticals in India have been dissolving safety records in acid or having to recall the batches tied to patient deaths. And so when the FDA does go, they find these problems, but the level of FDA oversight just needs to increase for the overseas facilities to be on U.S. standards.
So with all that being said by Andrew, and add to that, as if there has to be anything added to all that, the fact that the Trump administration is laying down a new set of tariffs on generic drug imports, 2-year grace period through July 2028, but then 100% at that point, and the penalty rate will double in August of 2029. Of course, when we all know when it comes to tariffs, that could change on a whim as well. So, Andrew, what was one of, and your report doesn't just describe the hows and the whys and the whats, but you also provide solutions. What's one of the, out of the solutions and responses to this current situation, what is the most realistic and maybe the fastest acting one that should be and can be put into place?
Yeah, so I think that this tariff is also a great head start and a great beginning to recognizing a lot of the problems. I think that once you have 100% or even 200% tariffs, it's also important to recognize that a lot of these generic drugs are a penny a dose. And so you might even need a little bit higher of a percent than even what's being proposed right now to make a difference. But in addition to tariffs like this and really continuing down this path to make sure that these are effective, I think that another great thing that we can do is with the government procurement, what kind of drugs we buy for the military, for the Pentagon, for our healthcare systems, we can start actually rewarding resiliency in the system. We can start buying American-made drugs. We can start actually rewarding quality and good domestic supply rather than always just prioritizing the lowest bidder and actually looking at how we can build resilience and quality in the supply chain system. And I think that's an easy thing that any administration can do at any point is at least start with that demand signal that the government is investing in quality here in the U.S.
You can read the results, the findings of the report, the hollowing out of America's medicine cabinet at the website for Coalition for a Prosperous America at prosperousamerica.org. He is their senior economist, Andrew Rauschenberg. Andrew, thank you for the understanding of what is happening, why it's happening, and more importantly, the solutions and answers that now with that tariff timetable I just relayed, a lot of people are on the clock right now, and hopefully they will respond and not get shut out and cost the Americans more than they're already spending on healthcare. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.